ecosystem and left salmon on the verge of extinction. Hear also about how the events of 2002 galvanized the native people, including a new generation of youth, to fight on, using everything from shareholder advocacy to local organizing. Today's program was produced at KIDE, native-owned and solar-powered radio in Hoopa, California, by Roby Cook, and Northern California Cultural Communications, a native-controlled media resource organization serving Native American and rural Northern California communities. To listen to the entire program or for a CD copy, visit www.flickerfeather.org or call 1-800-461-3991. Thanks to Jim Bennett, Michael Yoshida, and the Pacifica Radio Foundation for distribution assistance. Our Sprouts Air Traffic Controller is Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm Debbie Linehart from KRFC in Fort Collins, Colorado. Tune in to next week's Sprouts, and until then, check us out on the web at www.sproutsradio.org.
And coming up next on Free Radio 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, 2 hours of local civil rights issues. Special guest tonight, Berkeley City Council member Chris Worthington on the marijuana situation in terms of enforcement up there and possibly some commentary on what we can do down here with the upcoming tax and regulate initiative hitting the city attorney's office and heading for the voters for this November. Stay tuned. That's from Better Red Than Dead, red spelled R-E-A-D. Yeah, the name of that one was Prozac. As mentioned before, this is Free Radio calling you, and hopefully you will be calling us. Phone number here is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also reach the studio, sort of, if I'm watching, by going to the web and going to Pages in Color, all one word, all small letters, .com. And I'll keep an occasional eye on that one in case you can't get through on the phone line at 427-3772 if you wish to get in touch. My name is Robert Norris. The show concerns itself with civil rights and local political issues. And the special guest tonight, as I mentioned before, at least I'm hoping he'll be calling in at 7:30. He has a meeting until 7, and he's informed me through his staff he'll be calling in at 7:30, is Chris Worthington, who's a liberal member of the Berkeley City Council, who covers the Telegraph Avenue area, and was instrumental in 1999 in trying to press for the Kinder and Safer Streets Act, which would have addressed the doubling of marijuana arrests and tripling of felony drug busts that was being done in Berkeley in the teeth of the 1979 Berkeley ordinance, which said to make busting people for marijuana the lowest priority. It's particularly relevant to us because, according to the packet I just looked at in the library, which was placed there earlier today, the Santa Cruz City Council notes that the city clerk has received the initiative, which some of you already know about because people like Tim Rinker and Andrea Tischler have talked about it here on the air. Tax and Regulate is an initiative being pressed by supporters of the right to use herb without the threat of police harassment, beatings, jail, loss of job, loss of driver's license, you name it. And in Oakland, as some of you may know, Tax and Regulate won. It was called Measure Z, I believe, in the 2004 November ballot. And, of course, it doesn't have a lot of impact until there's state action, but the idea is that cities adopting this initiative will prompt other cities to do so. And just as local initiatives in San Francisco and Santa Cruz in 1992 and 93 provoked a statewide Proposition 215 decriminalizing or actually legalizing medical use of marijuana, the same thing can happen with marijuana generally. And we'll see if that one is actually likely to happen. And then if the feds want to allow that to happen, and if the city governments, headed by such stalwarts as Mike Rutkin and Mayor Cynthia Matthews, will actually stand up for the rights of their citizens. We saw recently their phantom Office of Compassionate Use, which was passed by the Rutkin-Matthews Council, or perhaps we should call it the Matthews-Riley Council here in Santa Cruz, since Cynthia Matthews is the mayor and Emily Riley is the vice mayor, has absolutely no teeth whatsoever and simply sets up an office only after such time as the feds say it's okay. So in spite of what the state has said, in spite of what the county and the city have said, these brave city officials are not willing to do anything to protect the rights of local people on this issue in terms of a real office of compassionate use until they get the okay from the prohibitionists in Washington and from those great liberals on the U.S. Supreme Court. So, it's an interesting issue, and I'm hoping that Chris Worthington will be an interesting guest. He has been in the past. I haven't had him on the air in quite a while. I think, 3 or 4 years at least. And we'll be talking to him, as I said, around 7:30, and you'll be invited to call in, and I'll give an alternate number then for people to call because he'll be calling in on the audience 427-3772 line. So welcome to Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. Boy, I got to get some glass of water or something, or take the marbles out of my mouth. I have a bunch of street interviews I'm going to run by you. Some of them are court interviews. In fact, that's where we begin. HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with on civil rights issues, has Wednesday meetings at the courthouse, actually in the atrium area between the courthouse and the county building. For all of you who like it chilly, there is a coffee stand nearby, but it's still pretty chilly, I admit. And we plot out our strategies and air our gripes there at 9:30 in the morning on Wednesday. And I was actually there yesterday doing that with human rights organization organizer Bob Patton and a couple of other activists. And I ran into some people and did some interviews, and this is the upshot.
Okay, it's about 9:30. I'm outside Department 2 on Wednesday, February 8th, talking with
Richard Quigley.
And Richard, you and a companion whose name is
Lauren Lindahl.
were in court for criminal behavior today, in court of Heather Morse. And you were probably hugging at the same time, doing the same kind of criminal behavior under the moon in the near dark. Now, how can you account for your behavior here?
What are you talking about? Oh, I was sitting down at the beach, man, watching the moon go down over Santa Cruz.
Well, there you are.
How difficult can it be?
And do you agree this is what was happening?
This is what was happening.
And give us some more details about what went down.
Well, Ranger Roy came up and he parked down the parking lot about 50 yards from me and turned on his great big old high beam, high intensity, 2 million watt light and started shining at it, you know, and didn't identify himself. I didn't know it was no Ranger. I thought it was some idiot from First Alarm out bugging people. I didn't know. So finally I had to get out and walk down there and talk to him. And when I got down there, I saw it was a state truck and all that stuff, so I asked him to bring out some ID. Show me who you are. He wouldn't identify himself. He wanted to be a smart ass. He ended up writing us a ticket for being in this place after sunset.
Where was this?
It was down Rio Del Mar. There's a little 100-yard stretch of parking lot down there that they think is state park. And they don't know how to behave in Santa Cruz County. That's what it is. And when the judge this morning, I explained that to her, she agreed.
You actually had her initially offering to, you were suggesting a demur, that is a suggestion the law was unclear or wrongly charged.
Well, no, I didn't. It was because there was no notice.
And so you had no notice at the scene that there was actually a crime possibly being committed.
No, I had no idea. They didn't have any signs up that would indicate that there was anything wrong with being in a parking lot looking at the moon go down. I mean, come on. It is. For one thing, they're sitting there saying that the park hours, the beach, you know, is closed. How do you close a beach at sunset? How do you close a beach? That's absurd. It's like saying that we live here next to the most beautiful view in the world, but you can only enjoy it when the sun's out. Come dark. No, you can't look at the ocean
almost
anymore.
Almost the stupidest thing, you can't sleep at night in Santa Cruz.
Well, it's, yeah, equally as ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, Heather Morse offered to suspend the sentence if provided you pled no contest. You declined that.
But she was going to suspend the fine. She wasn't going to suspend the sentence. Uh-huh. Well, yeah, okay. But no contest, please, the same as guilty. I wasn't guilty of a damn thing. You know?
Now you're a person who isn't in the best of health.
I don't think that's relevant.
Well, in the sense she was concerned, I think, that she didn't want you to waste your time in court with this. You felt it was important to be here, right?
Well, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
The fine was what, about a couple hundred, a hundred and some odd dollars?
Yeah, $200, and again, that's not the issue. And to be honest with you, the thing, I would have argued against her dismissing it, except that she agreed, or she offered to call up the Rangers and tell them to get your goddamn act straight and quit behaving like jerks. They want to do something, put up some signs, quit acting like idiots, you know, don't offend the old people of this community, I guess. I think I'm one of those now.
You're getting pretty gray, but I, too, am gray as you are. What's your name?
My name's Lauren.
And, Lauren, what's your perspective on this? You, too, got a citation?
Yes, I did.
Was the Ranger rude, or was he viciously confrontational? Was Richard here confrontational and ornery with our minions of the law?
Oh, no. He was perfectly calm and reasonable up until the Ranger started giving us a huge attitude. He would not identify himself. He practically demanded our IDs and would not show us his.
Was he in uniform?
He had a little shirt on with a little badge on it, but that doesn't mean much, you know, and a little insignia on the side of the truck. But couldn't see that with the spotlight shining on you.
So he was shining a spotlight on the two of you. Was he taking pictures of the two of you hugging in the moonlight, or?
I don't know. It was so bright I couldn't tell.
Well, for one thing, we weren't hugging. We were just sitting there watching the moon go down.
But you could have. You may have an intent to hug happening soon.
Well, there might have been all kinds of intentions.
You might have intended to sleep as well. You know, there are all kinds of crimes here that were actually prevented by the swift action of this man with his searchlight. And you dare to take him to court?
State park rangers in this county need to be educated that they're in Santa Cruz, not down in East L.A., and they need to start acting right or get the fuck out. Now, we got a sheriff he's the chief law enforcement officer in this county, and I'm going to talk to him about this.
Sheriff Robbins?
Yes, and I'm going to ask him if he can't do something to curb this attitude of these rangers, because I keep hearing all kinds of stories about them.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they're in L.A., and they think they're dealing with gang shit, and they don't know how to be polite. And so we need to straighten that out. So, yeah, I'm going to talk to Robinson about it. He's a good man. I think he'll talk to it. talk to him. And between him talking to him and Judge Morse talking to him, maybe we made something better today.
We may have to do a fishing expedition down there to see exactly how those rangers are responding to this educational campaign.
Oh, we'll find out. I guarantee you one goddamn thing, they best be polite when they come back at me.
Now, what? Anything else happening in the county you think we should know about, sort of as an update? Because I know we tried to reach you the other day. You weren't feeling well, and we couldn't get a hold of you. You were busy, actually. You were moving.
Still moving. Yeah. Nothing else. I mean, everything is just, you know, county shit is county shit. We got a shortage of judges because they're dying like flies.
Have you considered applying for a judgeship yourself?
You got to be a lawyer.
Well, I think they can make an exception in your case.
I mean, you got to be a lawyer and a Republican, and it's like, I got half of it.
Well, there you are. Yeah. Maybe you get a special appointment. Got quick law, an honorary law degree, perhaps.
Yeah, something like that. I'm going outside to smoke a cigarette, man. I love to talk to you, but I can't do it without a smoke.
Thank you, Richard. I'm going to a Huff meeting.
Okay.
Okay, it's about 9:40. I'm at the Huff meeting with the infamous
Hot Rod, the one and only Lonely.
John Rapport?
Yes.
Are you on report today, John?
I'm reporting the best I can with the brains I still got left.
Right.
So the bottom line is we need to survive and save the planet, starting here and now,
right.
With our own self, and get educated to where we can... okay, I got hurt and attempted... problems where I gotta focus on what I gotta say, and I gotta.
You'd better focus on. Now you say you lost some property recently.
My goods and my medicine, my stuff. These guys assaulted me and they poked me with a stick in my face. And
where was this?
Under the bridge.
Which bridge?
The River Street illegal living bridge.
And so you were attempting to sleep illegally.
No, they call it camping. To me, it's surviving. And financially secure, however we can manage to... It was through right after the storms and the flood of the river. And Seely came and...
Sergeant Eric Seely?
Oh, yes, definitely. With the pub, the lady... Daniela, social worker, and they
offered you a nice warm bunk.
Right. This is a big story, man. I got to start being nervous about it. I'm still. It's not a retaliation, and I'm looking to. I ran away.
Let me go back to this. Seely and Danielle approached you. What happened then?
Well, they said I was camping, that I was going to get a ticket in 24 hours, and I tried to get my stuff together, but these other people that were there didn't want me there.
And how many people were there?
Oh, off and on, numerous people. Remember what was Camp Paradise? Well, look, man, there's not many places to go when you got to get out.
It's not clear where this is. This was under a bridge, under a River Street bridge.
You know where Camp Paradise used to be?
Yeah.
Or was?
Yeah.
Is.
Oh, that's where it was. It was near there.
Yeah, that bridge.
Okay.
And by the shelter. And as the Holy Spirit would lead me, I had no much choice because I had to get towards Emmeline. And dude, I'm an old man. I'm in pretty good shape, and a lot of people think I'm a young guy, but I'm suffering real bad, and that's why I can't just say this.
How old are you?
53 and 9 months.
Now you had a whole bunch of sites. Now, was this contact with Seely and Danielle before or after the assault?
Before and after.
I see. So they were sort of keeping an eye on you, but not close enough. Huh?
Oh, they were very much eyeing me, as long as with everybody else, as much as they can get out of me. That's the problem with me being suicidal.
Now, were they giving you citations or just sort of checking your ID and talking to you?
I don't have an ID constantly. They keep taking all my stuff.
Right.
Get it through your head.
Right.
I am a victim of being a street person. To become dead on no arrival.
Back to the Seely Danielle contact. What was the nature of that contact?
Christ. They came and visually inspected on the levee And I knew I was there because of the park ranger, and this goes on and on and on and on.
They knew you were there. What did they do, having known you were there? Was there any citation issued?
Oh, it was a fun and games type thing. They just loved to fuck with me.
What did they do? Again,
they want to be...
Specifically, did they write you a citation? Yes,
they
no?
They gave me a verbal warning.
Okay.
And said that if I was here, I told you the second time now, that, yeah, within tomorrow, and they wouldn't be... They'd be there early in the morning with their van, just like they did previously to me three or four times ago. And this is a constant issue of me trying to stay alive. As a matter of fact, right now I have to get out. I wish I can continue talking for a long time, and explain this. And that's one of the problems I'm having about existing.
Right. Getting back to what happened afterward. Now, this warning came what, yesterday, the day before?
No, this was about 2 weeks ago.
Did they come back in 24 hours?
No, I got assaulted by these two thugs, street people that wanted to start poking me because I left the wet clothes and garbage as we were cleaning it up. And I had a friend there named Gary, a white dude from Michigan, and he was helping me. And these other guys came up, Zeke and Kat, and provoked me. They said, "Well, you're getting your stuff." So they started. They picked up a stick and they were aggressive towards me and started poking me in the face and the chest and attempted to go around and he just got out of the farm and he pushed me in the back. And the main thing is, look,
did these guys
I had to run away for fear of my life.
You came back, what happened?
I was dehydrated, and I went and called 911 and told them, I says, I need an ambulance to check me out. I don't even know if they stabbed me, because I'm diabetic. I can't feel a lot of stuff. My hands and feet are numb. I'm on special medicine for that.
Did you go to a hospital and get checked out?
No, I stayed at, and I ran, they went and got my stuff and looked and got my bags and said they needed backpacks. I overheard them. Gary went back to picking up garbage. Didn't help me at all. As I ran up the hill, he was poking me, this guy named Cat.
And what was the outcome of all this?
The outcome is they took whatever they could from me. Seeley and the rest of the police came back. I was over. I didn't go back to my stuff. I went to Coke Call behind Denny's of an ambulance with 911 still to be... I just needed a fire truck or somebody to check me out. The paramedics. And I was sick. I was bad. And they came... the police came. And they didn't believe me, and they said that I was falsifying a 911 call. And then they took... They apprehended me. They got me up and... what do you call that? Hurt my arm and what?
Compliance hold.
Forced me with my arms, and what
come
do you call?
Along hold, perhaps.
When they hurt you with your arms, what do you call it? Anyway, they put. They hurt my arm, my left arm, and that was Seeley.
Were you jailed?
No, and they put me out on the street, and then they said you can go to the hospital on your own, and I didn't go back to my stuff because I was afraid to. And it wasn't worth it anymore. I got suicidal again. And what do you call that? Manic episode when you get so depressed you just don't want to live. When you keep getting fucked over.
So this was 2 weeks ago. What's happened? So since then...
And they... Seeley... I ran away from Seeley twice. Then the third time he caught me. And he handcuffed me on the side of Denny's. And he threw me into the police car and almost... crunched my feet in the door.
This was around the same time as the theft of your property and the assault and the 911.
Yeah. And then this is no fucking laughing matter, man. I still have a head. They kicked me in the head too. Not the police, but these other guys.
Right, so since then, what have you been doing in the last 2 weeks?
So I was in the psych ward at Dominican after they gave me IV and stabilized me. And then that was gotten to be ridiculous because they didn't do nothing for me and except give me some... The doctor talked to me, but no real solution. And they gave me a nice bed and food and were treating me good, but there was no real consolation.
How long were you there?
About a week. And then this, I got... cleaned up and showered and got a little more mentally relaxed. And so then they gave me my meds and gave me a taxi ride to a motel room, which I still have for one more day, over on a nice place on the air. And I've been inside that watching TV and trying to stay warm. But the nights get cold, and now it's not raining, and they're going to put me out, and they're offering me a bus ticket to wherever I want.
Who's offering you a bus ticket?
I think it's Dominican Order Police Department, Order Social Services.
Find out who's doing it. I'm curious.
Yeah, and who's paying for the motel room is...
Probably Community Action Board, is a guess.
Yeah, and that's who's going to help me. So, and then I'm going to wind up going back to where I can live. Where do you suggest? To hell and back?
There's plenty of outdoor spots which provide for easy access to the police department. Let me ask you this. Do you have any court cases pending?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm here. They're going to try to help me straighten it out.
I see. Well, I want the full report. I'm sure that we have a competent attorney who will help you at all costs. Yes. All right, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hot Rod. I'm sorry that we have to move on with the next item of business.
Yeah.
We're still outside the courthouse talking with... Actually, we're in the atrium talking to...
Tasmanian Barker.
And Tasmania, also known as...
Taz.
Hey, Taz. You've been notorious for... you were banned from the mall for a period of time, the Pacific Garden Mall.
Oh, for about 3 years I was in this case where they caught me dealing weed. I was banned from the mall, banned from the park.
This was 1,000 pounds of marijuana you were selling downtown?
No, this is about a gram.
A gram. Well, you see that even the small amount can lead to heroin. We know that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
you and a bunch of others were caught in one of the felony raids of our fine DAs after small quantities of marijuana.
Oh, yeah. Small amounts of pot. Well, I got off probation successfully, and now these inexperienced DAs are trying to give me 10 days jail time for a little trespassing infraction.
Now, tell me about that trespassing infraction. Also, we should note that you are, in fact, a man of darker hue than many of us around here.
I'm black. I'm homeless. I was in
frizzy hair, man.
They're called dreads, and I love them. Okay. Everyone else loves them, too.
All right. Right. Well, did the judge love them? How did Heather Morris treat you today? You were charged with trespassing. Go ahead.
Heather Morris treated me with such respect and indifference. She looked like a woman of the law. It's these damn district attorneys, man.
She is a former district attorney, of course.
Oh, wow. I didn't know all that. I could not tell.
Almost everybody in the judicial system as a district attorney here, there's very few exceptions. They're all out of Art Danner's DA's office when he was our DA before he croaked 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's bad news. Poor guy.
Right. Well, who knows? I mean, frankly, you don't see me wasting tears on judges when they die. As an individual, no doubt, you know, he had friends and he had people who cared about him and vice versa. Anyway, here you were in court today for trespass. What's that all about?
I'm homeless and my girlfriend and I were looking to get out of the rain, so we walked into a house that was open. And we were very respectful of the spot and cleaned it and whatnot. Cops found us, and now the DA wants to give me jail time and throw away my girlfriend's case. On the same thing.
And is this young, waifish-looking woman, what's your name, madam?
Courtney Kelleher.
Courtney, were you in fact part of this criminal conspiracy to seize a house?
If you could call it criminal.
And what was the deal? It was raining, and you insisted on not standing out in the rain, instead going indoors. What do you think you are, anyway?
Well, it was unused roof. I'm sorry.
And where was this place?
By Foster Freeze. Unused roof.
Was it an empty house? Was it a...
Empty for sale. Completely empty. It was unlocked. No broken entry. We cleaned up our trash. It was unused. I can even critique it for you. It's not worth the price.
So there was nobody living there. And was it furnished or?
No furnishing.
Unfurnished. No one living in it.
Even stole our furnishings. Stole our backpacks. Stole our tents. That's the only reason why we were sleeping there in the first place.
So that had happened before you went in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did this happen?
About a month ago.
Okay. Yeah. And so you were apprehended by an officer of the law?
We weren't apprehended. We were confronted. I make it very hard for them to apprehend me these days.
So what happened? How did they find out about your occupation?
Oh, about me being in the house?
Yes.
I don't know. I guess someone called. It was the first alarm, fools.
Or the rent-a-cop siren light.
And so the police, how did the police treat you when they picked you up?
You know what? He pretended to be respectful, but there is a little undertone of arrogance about him.
Who was the officer? Do you remember?
I didn't even take the time to remember his name. I knew his face, though.
And you were held in jail for how long?
Oh, actually, I wasn't incarcerated for this one, but they're trying this time.
So they cited you and released you?
Yeah.
Did they offer you another place to sleep?
Nope.
Interesting. So they had you in...
Recommend a shelter like they do us all the time.
Yeah, but I can't sleep. I cannot sleep alone because of my mental condition. He's my caretaker, and I'm sorry, that's not right for them to push us towards a shelter when we have to sleep alone on empty cots.
So you actually have a doctor's assertion that this is, in fact, a medical need of yours?
No, I'm getting one, and I'm going to prove it before my next court case.
Okay, and how old are you?
19.
Okay. And how old are you anyway, sir?
Ooh, 26.
Ooh, mama. So what happened in court? You were charged with trespass. That's a misdemeanor.
Yes, it is a misdemeanor.
And what happened in that case? And would you have a good public defender?
Pretrial. Because they want to lock me up for 10 days, so my public defender said it would be best for me to move for pretrial.
And they're proceeding with the case?
Yes, they are.
When is your pretrial for?
March 9th.
And what kind of issues do you think will come up at the pretrial?
I think issues of homelessness and vagrancy. Maybe the issue of pot, because since I am a known weed dealer on paper here, but I don't think that's very relevant to the case at hand. So big issues of vagrancy and, like, spaces at the shelter and just limited resources for a bunch of homeless people here and in the whole system trying to grind us all the time, knowing there's not resources for us here.
Now, what's the story in terms of resources for the homeless at this point? We're, of course, February 8th. The armory is open. Have you ever used the armory?
I personally have not used the armory because of homeless people who go there say there's drugs there, bad things they don't want going on around there. You know, plus my girlfriend with the shelter, she don't appreciate sleeping by herself. And it's just homeless people aren't as innocuous as most people think they are. There are some of us who are dangerous, and those of us who are not don't want to be around them.
And also, are couples allowed to sleep together at the armory?
I don't think so.
Unless you're married.
Gotta be married.
Well, time to go to a preacher, you two.
Or how about justice of the peace?
Actually, I don't believe in marriage myself, but I'll leave that up to you. So, again, the court date is?
March 9th.
That'll be in Department 2.
Department 2.
At 10 a.m.?
10 a.m.
And if people want to check out your file to see what kind of charges you're being charged with, how do you spell your last name?
BARKER-CRIMMINS. You can look up all that good stuff on how they screwed me.
Now, what's the story with, just by the by, have you observed whether there's still a kind of a heavy hunger for small quantities of marijuana in the local police department in terms of busting people for small sales?
No, there is not as much of a hunger. These days they're going after the methamphetamines, which has always been the problem in this town. Santa Cruz is pretty much prided and known for being a stoner surfer town. So why go after stoners?
It's really the methamphetamines and the chemicals that lead the gateway. It's not a natural occurring tree that should never have been outlawed.
You're here. Medical marijuana as an avenue. You two have medical marijuana cards. Are you interested in getting them?
I'm on my way to getting it. I self-medicated. My parents could have drugged me as a child. That's the only thing I trust, basically. And I know it helps me.
We are well on our way. Homegrown at Central Coast Alliance. And, you know, the doctors will take care of the rest. All we need to do is raise the money.
We've been talking with
Taz Barker
and
Courtney Kelleher.
Thank you, Courtney and Taz.
Thank you.
All right.
And the music you're hearing in the background, of course, is from SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, as recorded by Intrepid reporter Coral Brune, who's intrepiding around, or was while I was on vacation. The SAFE is still performing. It had its 105th week of consecutive We Play on the Streets, using public space appropriately, but not following the restrictive, repressive rules put forth by the City Council and selectively enforced by the Santa Cruz Police Department. That happens every Wednesday night from 6 to 10 in the evening. It happened last night, and I presume it's going to happen next week. If you want more information about SAFE or you want to be a part of it, come to those gatherings where there's hot soup and you can hear some happy sounds as well. You can also leave a message on the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. And that's the truth. So there's a lot of tape I want to get through, and I'm not going to be able to do it today, audio tape. I actually got a hold of the Downtown Commission's tape on the discussion they had at their last meeting. This is a group that meets every 2 months. It's an advisory group appointed by the Santa Cruz City Council to consider issues that affect downtown Santa Cruz. And, of course, the issue that I've been concerned with for at least a decade, actually 12 years since they first passed it, and even before that when they had earlier ordinances that were being misused by the Santa Cruz Police Department and other police agencies. The ordinances I'm concerned about are actually highlighted in today's Good Times. These are the downtown ordinances, and you don't actually get a full description of them. You get a kind of references to some of them. It's an article by Hunter Holcomb, who I believe has left the Good Times, but not before writing this article, which you can find, you know, in a stack of Good Times near you. Let's see here. I'm checking it out now as I speak. The name of the article is Law and Disorder. What could one questionable and unconstitutional downtown ordinance do to the future of Pacific Avenue? And it's sort of a I don't want to say novel or unique, but it's a particular perspective from which Hunter approaches the problem of the, well, for the city council, the problem of the Maurer case. John Maurer, as you know, we played him on the air probably half a dozen to a dozen times. He's a guy who is, I know him as a panhandler downtown. He was the man who had a little hat which said, "Fuck the pigs," parentheses, police, and was cited twice for that. And the story is actually fairly accurately discussed in the Good Times article. And I'm going to wait till Sunday to go into it in detail so folks will have an opportunity to read over the article. But the upshot of all this is that there is an ordinance that will be coming back to the Santa Cruz City Council, which essentially involves a relatively minor modification. It has to do with a part of the rather nasty panhandling law passed by the City Council in 1994 and made worse in 2002, which essentially gives us one of the worst panhandling laws in the state. Now, it is true. I don't want to deny it. I mean, it's probably true. I actually have not checked it out, so maybe it's not true. But I was told that Watsonville police don't allow people to panhandle in Watsonville, even though the state constitution and the federal constitution and court decisions around those constitutional rights require police and require cities to allow people to peacefully ask for spare change. Now, I was listening to an old discussion of the issue by the man who is really endlessly quoted in this article by Hunter Holcomb. It's a sad thing, too. Mike Rotkin, council member. And why do I say that? It's because I don't like his opinion. Sure, it's true that I don't like his opinion on this. But the problem that I find with media quoting Michael Rotkin at such length is he poses as some kind of an expert and neutral, knowledgeable party, some kind of elder who stands above the fray and is able to give you an impartial view. This, which of course is ridiculous, because he helped write these laws, he passed these laws, he defends these laws, and of course he's on cozy terms with the police department who enforce these laws. So it's really misleading for the article to give so much space to him and act as though it's some sort of the neutral fellow we go to for his opinion. The article does quote me on a couple of occasions, but Rotkin gets at least five times as much coverage as I or other critics do. And there are those quotes from the downtown hosts and so forth. I guess I am getting into this Good Times article. The real reason I mentioned it, though, is because coming back to City Council, though not on Tuesday, at least not according to the City Council agenda, I suppose they could put it on as an emergency item. I'm not sure how they could get away with that, since they already know about the situation. It's hardly an emergency. But Rotkin has done this before. He did this with the juggling law back in 2003 when he knew full well that Tom Noddy was intending to do protests downtown or invite others to come to town to do protests or to actually just to juggle. And in order to forestall that, Rotkin passed an emergency ordinance, which, while it's still illegal to hacky sack, still illegal to blow bubbles, unless you're a professional bubble blower, still illegal to throw a ball back and forth, still illegal in theory to pour fluids through the air, it's not illegal to juggle because Rotkin put an emergency law on the agenda in 2003 and the council quickly zipped it through in order to stop either a lawsuit or worse, making the city look ridiculous by having a bunch of professional jugglers getting hauled away by the Santa Cruz police. So they might come. They might try to do a patch-up of this, the panhandling law, by an emergency ordinance. That's what I'm saying. It's a possibility. The panhandling law, for those who wanted to find it, you can go to the Huff website, and there's actually a full link to the panhandling law, which is a city code. And the panhandling law is actually, it's called the aggressive solicitation law, and it's 9.10 is the actual code section. And it has all kinds of restrictive sections, which are not enforced by the police unless, of course, they choose to do so. I mean, the most obvious section that is absurd is that it is illegal under this. I want to find this exact section here because I'm always saying this. I want to make sure I am not I'm not mistaken. Let's see here. It is illegal to panhandle. That is today to solicit for anything of value. It means any verbal request or any nonverbal request, which is a sign, let's say, which seeks an immediate donation of money, food, cigarettes, or items of value. And the section here is 9.10.030, place of solicitation, section J, while seated on or leaning against any public bench, planter, monument, or other public property. So it is illegal to panhandle while seated on public property. Guess what, folks? The sidewalk is public property. So all seated panhandling, according to section 9.10.030J of the city code, is illegal. Of course, you don't see officers enforcing that. I actually have never heard of a case where that's been enforced, but it is a power given them which is obviously unconstitutional. It can't be sensible or compassionate or coherent even to require people who are panhandling to stand up while they panhandle. And I actually want to take that back. I have heard of a person cited for that. It was a 65 to 70-year-old man named John Telfair, who's an old activist fighting psychiatric abuse. You sometimes see him down across from the Cinema 9 next to O'Neill Sports Shop. He was there actually about a week ago. He goes back and forth in the country visiting his wife, who's currently in an institution in, I guess it's North Carolina, and he takes the bus and he panhandles to get the money to do that and to live here while he's here. And there used to be a CSO named, I think it was Malate. I sometimes see him around. And he would harass Telfair and tell him that he had to stand up, that he couldn't sit down while panhandling. And at that time, which was before 2002, when they made the laws even worse, the city council, the Rotkin, Matthews, Riley, Porter city council, made the laws even worse, it was legal to sit down and panhandle with a sign, but not if you said, hey, can I have some change or any spare change? That would be illegal under section 9.10.030J. So what happened was this CSO was simply lying to Telfair about it and harassing him anyway. because he didn't like the way he looked, and he wanted him to discourage him from panhandling. So having an old guy stand there holding up a sign, because that's what he was doing. John always held up a sign and didn't ask for money verbally. Maybe he found it too undignified. Maybe he just didn't think it was appropriate, but I've never heard him verbally request money. But he always has a sign. Now he does the same thing, but it is actually, the law has been made worse so as to support the police department position, so that it is now illegal to sit down with a sign, any sign, and panhandle. And you'll say, well, that's ridiculous. There are people all down the avenue have signs, and they're seated, and what's going on there? And the answer is, they are there at the pleasure of the police department. At any time the police department wants to cite them or harass them or remove them, they have the power to do so. This is kind of like the power that Bush claims he has to spy on you, but he won't do it because he's only interested in Al-Qaeda people. This is the power that the Santa Cruz Police Department apparently is asserting it has the right to do with peaceful political groups, and that our mayor, two-minute Cynthia Matthews, knew about and endorsed, and that issue, by the way, will be coming back to the Santa Cruz City Council, not for any meaningful resolution unless a couple hundred people show up and demand it, but it will be coming back on Tuesday, this next Tuesday City Council meeting, item number 35, in the afternoon, of course, not in the evening when people have time to be there, but in the afternoon when less people will be there. That item will be coming back at the Santa Cruz City Council. Also note, while I'm babbling about this stuff, that the day before, Monday, is the meeting of the Public Safety Committee. This is the sort of the cliquey cabal in the City Council with Rotkin, Kennedy, and Porter, or maybe it's, no, Kennedy's gone. Rotkin, Coonerty, and Porter are the three new moguls on this particular subcommittee or committee, who are charged with looking over the police department's behavior. They are going to be able to see the report of the police department under Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel and Chief Howard Scarry investigating themselves on this issue. And Vogel will be reporting back to them, but of course he won't be able to see the substance of his report because it'll be a classified personnel report. It's interesting. Supposedly, state law prohibits the disclosure of this kind of information, which, of course, makes it very, very difficult to hold police departments accountable, which allows for the kinds of massive abuses against the public which you see being exposed, for example, in the last 4 days in the San Francisco Chronicle. I don't know if anybody here reads the Chronicle, anybody, any of you listeners out there, but the San Francisco Chronicle has for 4 days on the front pages been doing a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, five-part series, I guess now, on the use of force and the failure of the police commission and the Office of Civilian Complaints up there and the police department to hold its rogue cops in check. Massive use of force by police officers who don't get held accountable for it. And they don't get complaints sustained either because the Office of Civilian Complaints is too timid, and the police department holds up on the records, so the records get delayed, and the police lobby has pushed through a law which makes the police free and clear after a year if their reports are not, if the complaints are not followed up within that period of time. It's quite a nice racket for the Police Officers Association and police officers, and really bad. It's actually bad for the police department generally, because what it does is it protects the worst in the police department. And it tars good police officers with the bad reputations that bad police officers have, and makes everybody nervous and anxious when they see a squad car or a blue uniform. Not everybody. There's some people who have a lot of confidence in the police, and let's be fair, some people don't feel that way. I began this discussion talking about the downtown ordinances and the fact that I'm going to be I've actually gotten a hold of the Downtown Commission tape. The Downtown Commission is the group that's supposed to be the advisory body that kind of vets the issue, looks over the issue before it gets to City Council, of what's been happening with the downtown ordinances. Well, they haven't yet even looked at the issue of this profane and abusive panhandling section, which is a minor section of a much broader bad law passed by the City Council in 1994, made worse in 2002. But the section that is going to be thrown out, and actually has been thrown out by a federal court informally in the John Maurer case, is 9.10.040. Any person who solicits in any of the following manners is guilty of an infraction, Section D, by using profane or abusive language either during the solicitation or following a refusal. And the police used that, of course, to harass John Maurer because he had this little sign in his hat which said, fuck the pigs. Even though what he was really talking about was police harassment under other downtown ordinances, which he was harassed for as he sat in front of the Palomar Hotel with little pennies arranged on the sidewalk looking for some spare change. You know, why should we care about these kind of picayune things? Perhaps we shouldn't. Maybe you should call and give me your thoughts. 427-3772 is the number here, 427-FRSC. Give me a call and we can talk about it. And while I await your call, of course, I'll go on talking about what I'm talking about. I, of course, have a standard answer. If they can do it to him, they can do it to us. And it doesn't really matter. Most of us may not panhandle downtown, but there's also provisions, for example, making it criminal to have a political table which has any kind of literature on it for more than an hour in a spot downtown. Completely preposterous. Why would that be illegal? And, of course, it's not enforced either unless you're a member of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or unless you were part of the Vigil Against Two Wars, which is a vigil I was a part of two years ago, actually 2.5 years ago now, in March of 2003 when Bush began his war. The other war, of course, is the war on the poor that we were protesting. You know, and what do we do about it? Well, I suggest people show up in force Monday at 4 o'clock at the Public Safety Committee if they don't like that Spygate stuff that came down. And that's, again, police officers infiltrating, surveilling, and spying in plain clothes on political groups here in Santa Cruz. And that happened, of course, for the last night DIY, do-it-yourself parade group, which went off very well, but was the victim of this kind of police spying. And apparently the police chief lied about it, claiming this was the only case where this was done, at which point an indie media representative, a person who worked with that online media source, came forward with various other photos of police officers from indie media stories in the last year, showing that Santa Cruz police officers had indeed been involved in other instances of surveillance of peaceful groups. I mean, there are all kinds of issues. One is, should the police chief get away with not telling the truth? Should a city council be retained in office that allows this to happen? Should a city manager who appoints Police Chief Howard Scarry, city manager for life Dick Wilson, be allowed to stay in office after doing this kind of stuff, letting it happen? We've talked about this for some time on this. I mean, I've had numerous criticisms of the fact that there's no real accountability for any of these long-time, highly paid professional people like Dick Wilson, like City Attorney John Barisone, like Police Chief Howard Scarry, who just, they're there till they die or choose to retire. You know, that's, or unless there's some major scandal that we can really raise the roof on. I mean, that's the only way you get something done, and that's what you have to do, really, is raise the roof on these issues. And, of course, that's what I'm hoping people are going to do at 4 o'clock, City Hall on Monday, and at 3 o'clock, City Hall on Tuesday. 4 o'clock is the Public Safety Committee meeting, 3 o'clock, item 35, which will actually be a little bit later in the afternoon, but who knows when. They won't set a time certain for it, is the report from the Public Safety Committee to the whole City Council and presumably to the community. I'm going to be playing more of the Downtown Commission's discussion of the downtown ordinances, or actually its sort of endorsement of the current downtown ordinances without much discussion at all, which happened at their last meeting, as well as the discussion that apparently was successful in at least delaying this 10 minutes in a parking garage and you're out law. The law that is it that apparently some staff members is being pushed by Matt Farrell of the Parking Department of Public Works to get rid of undesirables in them parking lots. And that's course, it impacts everybody else because, in much as people, you know, much as they do, just love to give police the option to go after people who they regard as undesirable, with the secure hope and knowledge that they won't go after fashionable upper middle class people because the police know better. Of course, that's not true. When you give police power, they tend to go after whoever they choose to go after. And unfortunately, power corrupts in that way. But the law requires you to pretend that your law is even-handed. So if you put the words homeless, grubby, etc., a person of, you know, who's hasn't got much money, that's considered to be unconstitutionally discriminatory, and of course it is. So instead, they want the police to make those kinds of distinctions without having them written into the law, kind of a wink-nod situation. Or whether city council and the city manager want that done or not, that is, in fact, what the police do with the law. And when it's revealed that that's what they do with the law, as it was in the Riley Porter hearings of 2002 that happened in that summer, instead of reining in the police, the response the response of Riley and Porter is to propose a law which gives them more power, and then 6 months later to destroy the police review board. That's the people we have sitting at city council right now. Now, Riley put into the city council packet a copy of the San Francisco guidelines on surveillance of peaceful political groups. And you can find that in the public library. I guess it's a 1999 set of guidelines. It's 8 pages long. I didn't bother to read it. You know, it might be good, might be bad. I don't know how effective it is in controlling the Santa Cruz police. We would have to ask people like the ACLU and Cop Watch and other minority groups up there, which would be useful to do. But Riley also said she wouldn't be coming to the Public Safety Committee meeting, so she's just sort of throwing this out for us to look at. The Public Safety Committee is supposed to be receiving, as I said before, the report of Deputy Police Chief Kevin Vogel on the Spygate from December 31st and the spying on that particular incident, if not on other incidents. Don't expect too much out of this, but of course it's an opportunity for people to express their concern, and it's also, I think, an opportunity for people to express their concern about broader police misconduct downtown, because that's what the Public Safety Committee is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be monitoring the police department, public safety. That's the legitimate function of the police, to look after the public safety. Not to harass people for hacky sacking, not to demand that they sit in this space but not in that space, not to go after musicians because the Pacific Trading Company doesn't like them. No, none of that stuff. Their job is to look after the safety of our community. And when they take a broader perspective on this, and when they start dipping into social legislation, moving people away from certain areas because they don't think that groups of people should be gathering because it isn't photogenic or because the merchants don't like it, they're trampling on the Constitution. And that's why people need to come 4 o'clock, City Hall, Monday. And I guess today's the 9th, so it'll be the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th. Monday the 13th. Check it out, 4 o'clock. Let's have a little more interviewing from the street. And maybe I will see you there, because I think I'm going to be showing up. I will be playing on Sunday some really clear Downtown Commission tape. I've played Downtown Commission stuff before, and you can find it archived at huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. But it's not the most audible tape. I mean, you can, if you listen carefully, you can hear what goes on. I actually got paid for and secured a tape from the Downtown Commission itself, which actually has an audible version of that, so I'm going to replay some of that this Sunday for those of you who want to hear it. And while we're waiting for that, let's hear some of this.
We're out here at 10:15 in the county courthouse about January 26th. We're talking with Bob Patton, the Human Rights Organization. Bob, you had a recently conversation with Ken Cole, director of the Human Services Center.
Homeless,
I know.
Homeless Service Center.
Correct. Sometimes it's not too human, but it's certainly rather homeless. Though not for those who make money off the program. like Director Ken Cole. Also, I guess Mike here, who has a guitar on his back, and another at his side, had a problem getting on the shelter program because he was told about a policy. What was that policy?
Well, the conversation I initiated with Michael, and he was suggesting, or he was commenting that he and others had been, if I'm correct, and Michael's here, he can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but that people were turned away because they had too much gear, too much luggage carrying on to the shuttles to get to the satellite service.
The armory. In this
the armory, and any of them, any the buses that take people to the shelter areas require to be able to put, and this is what Ken Cole confirmed to me when I questioned about the policy, that the policy for screening does prohibit anyone from taking a gear that is more than they can place on their lap or in front of them on a seat they occupy on one of the transports. And that he went on to say that if a individual that's having problem with too much gear would approach whoever it is, it's the lot manager at that time, and I was given some names, but I can't recall them offhand, that they would try to get them into a locker prior to getting on the bus so they could store their gear. But the policy does exist, and he went on to explain that if they didn't have a policy like that, that every homeless person with their trailers and carts and a sundress various other
methods of
transportation would just be crowding the areas. So they're actually meant to keep people with a large amount of gear from going on the buses.
So, Mike, you had a problem with this at one point. Do you think it was due to the preferences of a particular manager?
Oh, yeah, he was cracking down extra hard, and I didn't question what he said was, you know, legitimate. He just said I had too much stuff to go, and so...
You had two guitars?
Yeah, I had two guitars and a backpack, and so...
Now, was that, had you been in that situation before and not had a problem?
Right, yeah. It just varies on the monitor and their mood, and you just got to know what your rights are, and I just didn't...
Did you ask the monitor to provide storage space so you could store the stuff and then get on the bus?
I didn't ask him. I mean, I might have been able to work something out with somebody somehow, but...
Have you been back since?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going tonight, so it's okay.
Still carrying two guitars and a backpack?
Yeah, that's what I'll have tonight. It just, like I said, it was...
And you haven't been hassled since?
Right. That's true.
However, what did you in essence complain about it, or did somebody else complain about it? And perhaps as a consequence of that complaint, there's a more liberal policy, or are different managers involved, or have you shrunk and become a smaller person? What's happened?
Yeah, right. Like I said, it varies on managers, and some people take on quite a bit of stuff, so it just depends on... how things go.
And how often do you use the service up there?
Oh, about once a week.
And what time do you have to show up to usually be guaranteed a space?
Oh, they start signing up around 4:30, and if you get there by 5:30, you might still get on, but it depends how many are signed up.
And in the morning, what time do you have to get up?
Well, they usually keep the lights on around 5:30.
And is it, if you're in the rain and you come down to the homeless service center, are you allowed shelter, or do they kind of make you stand out in the drip, drip, drip?
Well, you can look like you're busy in the shelter or hygiene area and the locker area and all that till around 10:30, and then it's like, if you don't have a shower scheduled or a laundry sign up, you gotta mosey.
Shall we say, remove you from the premises?
Well, yeah, they get kind of loud.
Have you been told to take your guitars and hit the road?
Well, no, I'm usually gone by then, but...
You slip out before the humiliating experience starts.
Yeah, before they roust the loiterers.
Well, I'm glad to know we have some law-abiding musicians in this town. Now, I understand there's another group that's actually violating the downtown ordinances every week.
Another group? Oh.
It's group called the Scumbags for Active Foolish Ickiness or Safe or something you call
it. Guys, yeah, they're out there. Hey, how are you today? Are you guys?
Thank you, Mike. 10:30, we're here in San Lorenzo Park talking with
Jed Fleming. They call me Bear.
An infamous musician of no little repute. And so what's happening there, Ted?
I broke a guitar string, and I wanted to know if the general public would help a starving musician.
Is this a thinly disguised panhandling ploy, Ted?
This is not panhandling. This is pure begging.
I see. So we're kind of at the Indian solution, the Hindu approach to the Bombay approach. Deal.
I'm about to get on my elephant right now and ride away if you don't leave me alone.
Yeah.
Listen, folks, don't you know that God loves you? I know he does. You know what? Come listen to Bear sing. I'll sing to your heart.
All right. Now, where can Bear be heard?
I'm getting a guitar on the 1st, and I'll be on Pacific Avenue by Irish Pub.
Without a G-string, so to speak, right?
I'll leave her with a G-string.
Anything happening around the park as far as are people being left alone? Are they being harassed? Is it sort of in the middle? What's cooking here?
Well, what's cooking is we are becoming friends with the officers on bicycles. We are doing our part to be straight up. You know, we don't drink a beer here. We go over and drink it somewhere else, then come back here.
Okay.
You know, because we do drink or go smoke a joint.
Adults should not be allowed to drink beer unless they have money in homes. We know that, right?
Well, some people think that. But you know what? I'm an independent kind of bear. I do what I do. Hey, there's a bear in the woods.
Any other reports from the grass?
We don't have enough weed.
Security guards
are.
This is Boston.
No guards.
The security guards are harassing us when we're trying to sleep.
And what's your first name?
Jim.
Jim, when's the last time you suffered this kind of treatment from a security guard? What happened? What happened?
I just had to move.
And where did this incident take place?
Underneath that big tree.
And you're pointing toward the kind of the restrooms where for the lawn bowling area in the park.
The big tree.
The big tree near the restrooms. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. And what exactly? What time did this incident happen? More or less.
11:30.
And what did the guy do? He just said move.
He said you're gonna. I'm gonna get you arrested if you don't move.
And dare you say that that our man?
Yeah, Jim had a seizure.
You had a seizure?
Oh, I have seizures all the time.
He has them all the time.
And was this seizure prior to being told to move, or?
No,
they just happened.
The seizures just happened every about
you never
3 weeks.
So it wasn't related to what he had said or anything.
No, it's just he's an asshole.
Indeed.
Boston, because of that. A lot because of that. Because we love.
Stay close to?
Boston. The guy that's seizures.
Oh, I got you. Okay. So, where did you move to?
Next to the sheriff's.
Well, you got protection there. All right. Well, thank you very much.
He's telling the truth.
I believe it. So, Jennifer, here we are talking with you and, of course, your associate here. What's his name?
This is Nick.
And Nick here, it looks like Nick is interested in doing a little recording himself.
Mm.
So, Jennifer, what, an eviction problem?
Let's see what happened. Well, I quit my job because I couldn't get insurance. I was a manager at the UPS store.
Right.
And I was nervous.
I'm walking close to you. Can shield you from the sun.
Oh, thank you. And so what happened is I went back to school, and like a chain of events happened where my financial aid was late. My dog got hit by, I went to a dinner party over in the west side. I lived out in Freedom, and I went to walk her after the party on a leash. She took off after cut. She got hit. Anyway, the bill was like $4,600, three surgeries. So I paid $800, and I paid $600.
For your dog's surgery.
For my dog. And then I couldn't pay no more. You know, I've had her since she was 8 weeks old, and she's almost six now. And she's part of our family, and I've got four kids. And they wouldn't let me have her without paying the school bill. And then I had $500 to borrow to give to my landlord. He sent it back to me, and he evicted me because my rent was about $95. Mm-hmm. So I lost my dog, and I got evicted.
Right.
And I had to be out October 19th, which I was. And I've been homeless ever since.
So what have you been doing? How have you been making do at night?
Well, I stayed at my girlfriend's for like a month.
Right.
And then now I've just been staying in motel rooms. My money's kind of running out. Stay on the beach. Got woke up by the cops.
When was the last time that happened?
Taken. It was 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
What did the cops tell you?
They took my license because it was suspended, but I was on a bicycle. And so now I have no ID.
What police did this? What police agency?
The lifeguards.
The lifeguards?
Yeah,
you remember the name of the...
They were totally rude. No, I don't know the names. I know their faces. And they were just really rude. They're like, well, you want a ticket or not? I says, I don't care. Give me a ticket. You know, I was only here for a couple hours, which I had been.
Mm-hmm. Did you have your child with you?
Mm-hmm. I had him with me, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And did they offer to confiscate your child and turn him over to CPS? Or?
No, they didn't go there. I'm glad, because that would have really...
Has that happened? Have you been threatened with that?
No. No, not yet. I'm trying to like do everything I have. I joined the Women's Venture Project. So I go like to my second meeting tomorrow.
Tell us about that. What is it?
Women's Venture is where you get training in non-traditional women, in non-traditional trades for women. So I signed up for like electrician or locksmithing. And
so
they
are going to be hiring you to do some work later on.
Well, what did you say?
We may be hiring you to do some work later.
Maybe, yeah. I want to be a locksmith. But, so I'm waiting for that. I'm just waiting for that to go through and trying to survive.
How are you treated as a homeless mom by, let's say, businesses or other agencies?
You know, I don't think people really know. You know, I don't really want to bore people with my drag. I don't know what they think. And
well, I appreciate being bored with the story. Thank you.
As a homeless mom, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I'm from Santa Cruz. I was born here. And
how old are you?
36. Yeah.
Where are your other kids?
One's in school, and then one's with his grandma, and my daughter, she's with her boyfriend. She's 18.
You're all so in the county?
Yeah. They stayed the night at my mom's, and actually she's picking my one up from school today. I'm going to take him for a couple days.
Any service agencies giving you any particular help?
No. I try to get families in transition. It's like a 6 to 9 month waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gone to any Catholic charities. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to do what I can without, you know, taking things I don't need. Like the help, I don't, you know what I mean? Because I'm not ready to get a place. Obviously, I don't have enough money yet. And working with the county, and this, you know, everything's just kind of taking forever to process to get into a home. It's like, it's crazy. And I won't stay at the shelter because it's all drugs and it's all dirty.
Have you tried it and it's just bad?
No, I've been down there, and I went down there and check out the laundry facility and stuff, and I'm not going to spend my time there at all, especially with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just all bad.
What about the family shelter, the one that's the 4-story building that's on the corner of...
Yeah, it's just the whole area. I don't like it at all.
How are you? You're an attractive single woman. How's that? You know, it's true.
Well, a lot of people want to give you a place to stay because of that.
And
a lot of
they have strings attached.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I don't go for that. So.
So my offer is obviously going to be refused immediately. Just kidding, folks. Actually, I don't have a place to stay myself. So any of you out there who know of a room to rent? Yeah, I'm looking for a room to rent. But I've got money for a room, so it's not I got the money.
There's a lot of places right now, rooms right now. I've been looking, A lot of jobs, you know.
Are you working yourself?
I'm not working. I'm waiting. I have to do this thing with the Women's Venture Project. You know, it's going to be, once I'm in there, you go and work out at the YMCA every day, and then you go to your training. It's like 5 weeks course, depending on what.
They pay you for it?
They don't pay you for it, but they, it's a training. It's legitimate training in whatever field you get into.
So are you surviving off of income, or?
Yeah, I get AFTC, but they've been, you know, she told me I got.
What does that provide?
It's supposed to provide $862 a month for me. Yeah, to live on.
And you're responsible for how many of the kids?
All of my kids, four
right,
kids.
Right, but one is 18 now.
Yeah, but she goes to school still.
Right, so you're actually feeding and caring for all these kids.
Yeah.
And you're roaming about during the day.
Oh, I do.
We expect you to do full reports for free radio Santa Cruz.
I can't sit around and do anything. I can't just sit around, you know, and just do nothing. So I got to be out and see what new opportunity might happen.
Anything you want to say to the community out there?
I think that, like the animal shelter and people that take care of animals, you know, they should be a little more help or whatever. Like, they refused me everywhere I took my dog because I had no money.
How's your dog doing?
She's fine. The lady actually ended up, that worked there, she ended up adopting her.
Oh, yeah? What's her name?
Kristen.
What's the name of the dog?
Blue. Yeah,
cool.
And I don't know about being on the radio and all this, but I don't know what
you're a famous star now, I'm afraid.
I don't know what good he's going to tell you know to tell you my story, but it's just hard. You know, it's hard to like get
to know what's going on in the county.
Yeah,
we've been talking with
Jennifer.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
The Safesters, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. I'm Robert. This is Bathrobs Pierre's Broadsides. Call in number 831-427-3772. Want to catch Free Radio off air, or if you want to leave a message for us or public service announcement you may have, maybe you might want a show, you might want to give us some bucks, donate some equipment, express some concerns, oppose freak radio, control freak radio, as some have called us. Hey, want to hear about everything? Give a call, 427, to the off-air number, 4523. That's a voicemail. You can check us out. Getting a lot of new broadcasters who will be starting new shows. Thomas Levitt is one of them. He was a talk show, well, he was a talk show host who took over my talk show while I was away. And now he's become so addicted to it, he's going to do an early Sunday morning show, I guess from 7:30 to 9:30 thereabouts, right before I come into the studio. God help him. So you might want to check him out. I think he starts this Sunday. When I do my show 9:30 to 1, and he's going to be before that causing trouble. Maybe I'll come in early and cause him trouble. It could be. Again, 427-4523 is voicemail. 427-3772 is the on-air number, which isn't being used tonight, folks. So if you get, lonely, need some advice from Uncle Robert here, hey, I can tell you what to do. I'm as good as anybody. Think of me as your confidant. 427-3772. Tomorrow is Friday, and there will be a meeting of Food Not Bombs, which is a local group that makes poverty visible, serves vegan food, turns the waste of our society into decent, usable food, and does so without permits or permission from anybody in particular, but does so with the thanks of the community in general. And I believe they're still serving on Wednesday afternoons, 4 o'clock at the Farmer's Market. That's, of course, until the new 10 minutes in a parking lot and you're on your way law goes through the city council, as it's likely to go through like shit through a goose starting in March or before, depending on when they put it on the council agenda. If you want to oppose that, now's the time, 420-5020. That's the city council number. You can also tell them to dump the downtown ordinances. That's the set of laws that criminalize or make it more difficult, much more difficult, for street performers, political tablers, poor people, and, yes, the feared panhandlers in all the business districts. They actually criminalize most everything on the sidewalk in all non-Pacific Avenue streets, because there's a 10-foot forbidden zone, for example, for sitting or for having a display device or for peacefully asking for spare change. And since most sidewalks throughout the town are just about 10 feet wide, if you're not on Pacific Avenue, that sort of leaves all those First Amendment activities for those special little zones where you can, you know, kind of like where the Bush zones are, you know, where President Bush allows you to do your protesting several miles away. Kind of a similar approach to Santa Cruz has been used by our liberal, progressive city council. That's the one you elected, remember, in November, or perhaps you didn't vote. I don't know what the deal is. Anyway, they're there, and you're here, and unfortunately their laws are affecting you. So, let me look at my, what I rarely do, which is my my actual agenda here. Got a lot of interesting stories about street performers in different cities, which I think I'm going to talk to you about, talk about on Sunday, because I have a longer show. And again, I want to remind you, in about 10 minutes, I'm hoping to get a call from Chris Worthington, City Council member of Berkeley, who will be talking about, I guess, a number of things in Berkeley, but I'm going to be asking him a lot about the medical marijuana and the general policy of the police department, attempts of the Berkeley City Council and Berkeley activists to help hold the police department accountable. I've also got an interview with Brandon, the cello player, and I don't think I'm going to have time to play that today, and it'll be another treat for all you folks on Sunday if you want to tune in. Brandon, as you may know, is the man who plays the cello in front of New Leaf Market frequently, occasionally in front of the Pacific Trading Company at times, maybe even further down, sometimes in front of the Gap. And he was arrested in handcuffs and hauled off to the Pokey for failing to appear on two citations, one of which was an open cello case on the sidewalk, which Officer Klein apparently felt either blocking the sidewalk or was in a forbidden zone, as prescribed by the downtown ordinances. Another one was for being in a forbidden zone on the riverbank. Those forbidden zones seem to be expanding a lot these days, and give police officers who have a hard-on to do something or don't like what you're up to a lot of power. And I think it's time we took back some of that power. We need to take it back. And one way to take it back, of course, is to raise a hue and a cry whenever you see those little gremlins in purple, or are they wearing green these days? They're hosts. They kind of cluster around this office next to the Del Mar Theater on Pacific Avenue. And the police kind of cluster there, too. And they're described kind of inappropriately and optimistically in Hunter Holcomb's Good Times article today as somehow giving useful information to the tourists, when their main job is not that at all, but to run around as kind of cheap cops and harass people under threat of citation from sitting within 50 feet of a change-making machine or within 3 feet of each other if they have a sign out asking for spare change, or if they're performing at least 10 feet away from a building, 10 feet away from a crosswalk, 10 feet away from a kiosk, in the small zones left. And, of course, they do that when they feel like it. If they have a good relationship with you, they may not bother you. But should your rights be held peril to or made conditional on having a good relationship with the cops or the wannabe cops? And I think that the answer that most of us have would be no. We should have rights whether they like us or we like them. I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is we need those rights, all of us, including the police, in order to create a better society, in order to learn from the mistakes of those who've gone before us. And I think we see that pretty strongly in national debates around the NSA spying and so forth. I've asked the library to put Rico Thunder's ACLU police surveillance documents into the public library in the reserve section. And I was told that by yesterday that decision would be made. I haven't heard back from them, nor have I seen them online where they're supposed to be on the Santa Cruz Public Library's website. So I'll try to get back to you next time on that issue. I do have a positive report on a complaint I got from Doug McGrath, who Doug is an activist who with his partner Marilyn were involved in struggling for civil rights for homeless people, human rights, one might say, in terms of the opposition to the city's anti-homeless 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban that criminalizes about 85 to 90% of the homeless people every night because it's illegal to sleep either even in your own car, even if it's legally parked, even if nobody complains. It's illegal to sleep anywhere on public property and on much private property in Santa Cruz as well. But he's been fighting that. He went into the coffee roasting company downtown and got some nasty treatment from a manager there. And he called me up very upset about it, wanted to boycott the place. I went in and spoke to the staff and one of the other managers. I said, you know, it was an issue of some concern. He came back, Doug did, yesterday, I believe. And the manager was apologetic and really said she had too quickly told him that he had to leave because he had only bought one cup of coffee for three people. And in fact, he'd actually bought, I think, a cup of coffee for his friend. He had a Pepsi, and they go there every day. And she was cracking down too hard. And she acknowledged her mistake. And Doug graciously accepted her apology, and they worked it out. And I'm glad that happened. And I'd like to see a process in place where that can happen in all kinds of different stores. In fact, when Rotkin and Matthews were pushing for their anti-homeless downtown ordinances, their merchant paranoia ordinances, because the merchants want to give the police maximum power to get rid of the people that they regard as disruptive, whether they're political activists or panhandlers or petty drug dealers meaning marijuana salesmen, you know, selling a gram of marijuana. So Santa Cruz, folks, we're not talking about, you know, this is not Gilroy or Carmel. This is Santa Cruz. So when the ordinances were being proposed and are still being supported by Rotkin, as you can see by his commentary in today's Good Times, I proposed instead that what we needed was a policy whereby there was a code of conduct and a kind of an ombudsperson and a mediation service whereby merchants and people who had problems worked them out. There was kind of a set of guidelines that people would use, that people would talk to each other. And that of course, was the principle behind the street performers' guidelines, which were set up in 1980 by Jan Luby and Tom Noddy and other activists and performers who were fighting to stop a set of anti-homeless laws way back then, much more successfully than we've done since. And their street performers' guidelines were voluntary guidelines that said, you know, play, and if somebody complains after an hour, leave. But you don't have to. I mean, it's not voluntary. It's sort of more of a peer pressure thing. And it is, you know, you can keep playing if you want, but be aware that if a merchant's going crazy because they're hearing the same song, or if somebody else wants that spot, it'll become kind of customary and accepted to move after an hour. And I believe that worked pretty well for 22 years until Emily Riley and Ed Porter decided to give the police department more power and put in this, what I call the hall monitor program of move along every hour as a law or else go to jail, which is the current unconstitutional law we have going on downtown. Now, I'm hoping, I know human rights organizer Bob Patton is going to be trying to talk to downtown commission member Jim Brown, and I'm hoping that we can get the community generally to give more public input to the downtown commission regarding the need to change the downtown ordinances, to return our city to a voluntary approach rather than one which involves criminalizing people and giving the police inordinate powers. We need to take back our power. We need to realize that businesses, while they're important downtown and need to be respected just as we all need to be respected, they don't need the power to dictate the tone, the rights, and what goes on downtown in terms of how people can communicate with each other. It's just not appropriate. It's wrong. Produces a lot of resentment, produces a lot of hard edges. And I'm going to be talking about this issue more on Sunday as I go through the article by Hunter Holcomb, who apparently has left the Good Times, but his memory lingers on. I'd ask Rico Thunder to call in, but I don't know that he's going to do that. Maybe he'll call in on Sunday. He's actually filed for a second Public Records Act request around police spying on New Year's. He got a completely inadequate response on that, and he's hoping to get better a response on that whole issue. We have a caller, and we'll see who that is. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah. I'm just calling about the issue of the musicians downtown.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me that the musicians are playing music to enhance the environment, but the people that are in the stores that are selling things look at it as if they're taking some of the cash away from what they could get if those people weren't there. In other words, the concept is there are a lot of people with some extraneous money, and all these stores want to get some of that extraneous money, and they don't want people that don't pay for permits, et cetera, that are playing nice things in the air for free, but they're also pulling some of that economic money, if you really want to get down to it, from these stores who have to pay these fees. You know, they have to pay rental fees, they have to pay all these stupid fees from the county and the city.
Of course, caller, there are those who say that these people on the street, the musicians, are also generating a kind of attractive draw that's getting people to come and patronize those stores.
Well, you know, I think Santa Cruz is famous for that, and I wouldn't deny that, but I've been here for 20 years, and what I've seen is the police have downtown association little taxi stand down there where they can just hang out there and enforce the heavy hand if necessary.
Right.
But that's they have the lighter people doing the enforcing until it's necessary. You know?
The downtown information or informant center, as we call
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So to me it's like a military encampment, really, but it's to protect and serve the people that have the stores, you know. And it's not to really serve the people on the street that are just on the street.
How can we take it back, caller?
I think the best way to do it is to have a mass celebration downtown.
I like it.
Where people choose a time, what day it would be, who knows. But it wouldn't necessarily have to be the same Wednesday thing that they have every Wednesday, but it could be something else special, like a Saturday even. Something where a lot of people know it's going to happen, and there's clowns coming, all kinds of people come, the guy with the umbrella, all people come to make it show that the street is everyone's, and we're here to celebrate, not just to buy things.
I like it. I
yeah.
really like it. I think. I mean, we had the group called Downtown for All. I'm gonna cut you short because I'm waiting for this call from Berkeley. But what's your name, caller?
My name is Paul.
Hey, Paul, can you call again?
I sure will, and I always listen to you guys. Your show and everybody else's. It's really great.
Hey, thank you, Paul.
And keep it going.
All right, man.
Right on.
Bye bye. Yeah, I think that's a great idea Paul has, and. You know, I mean, that's what happened on New Year's, I believe. I wasn't in town. I'm told it really was a great scene and sort of a similar celebration. So hopefully that, you know, people can start, you know, organizing that kind of stuff or disorganizing that kind of stuff, as Rico Thunder put it, as the folks who were kind of doing their thing on New Year's described what they did, as or the unorganizers, as they call themselves. I'm kind of hoping to get this call. We'll see if Chris does call in. I'm gonna start giving you a little background on the situation for marijuana up in, well, the issue that I'm really trying to address here. The issue I'm trying to address is what can be done to, well, obviously to end the drug war and get the police off our backs. And, I mean, drug abuse is a problem, but police abuse, frankly, is a much worse problem in terms of how it impacts all of us in terms of resources. It's like you know, alcohol abuse is a problem, but a prohibition was a worse problem. I mean, I think that's... I've tried to be open-minded about this. I've tried to research prohibition, and I've asked myself, well, you know maybe there's a positive side to alcohol prohibition. I mean, didn't deaths from cirrhosis of the liver drop? You know, weren't there some advantages? And yes, to some extent, that's true. And there was a real concern by a lot of people that alcohol, it's a vicious drug. It's probably the worst drug Although cigarettes are more lethal, alcohol has more extensive immediate consequences in terms of its abuse when it's abused. But I still kind of come down on the side of prohibition is just wrong for a variety of reasons. And I don't want to even get into the long argument about it, but that was my choice. And I think that's the choice of most folks. I think most folks feel that drug prohibition for adults, we're not talking about driving while stoned or drunk or high, but using drugs in the privacy of your home or even in public in circumstances where you're not abusive or offensive toward other people, it's your business. It's nobody else's business. And particularly with marijuana, this has been really the consensus in California, I'm pretty sure, for the last 4 or 5 decades. You know, why then have police and prosecutors and prohibitionists and religious fanatics been able to hijack the issue? And particularly in Santa Cruz, the issue has been hijacked here too. The Santa Cruz Police Department, as you heard today from Taz talking earlier today, runs around and busts people, gives them felony busts and 3-year stay-away orders and months in jail for a gram sales of marijuana downtown. I'm sorry, that's crazy, life-destructive shit. And when the prosecutors accept that, when the ACLU turns away and doesn't bother to look at it, and when great liberal Mayor Mike Rotkin on the board of directors of the ACLU has no problem with it and doesn't propose any meaningful response to it and doesn't protest it, and buddy-buddies with the police department on that issue, I get really sick to my stomach and really pissed. So I'm hoping we can find... Well, one of the things that's being done, as you've heard, if you're a regular listener, is in Santa Cruz, an initiative is being proposed, a tax and regulate initiative, similar to Oakland's Measure Z, which was passed at the election last time in 2004. And that measure essentially says, let's tax and regulate it, let's make it the lowest priority, let's arrange for all this to happen and encourage the state government to do the same. And you've heard me kind of arguing with activists like Tim Rinker and Andrea Tischler, who are heading this effort, saying, great idea, but, you know, we need to do it faster, and we need to do it with, you know, holding our city officials as accountable as quickly as we can, and with as little bureaucratic bullshit as possible. We don't need polls for $9,000. You know, we don't need... Advisory initiatives. We don't need to wait until November. We need to take action as quickly as possible. And of course, one of the responses to that is, well, there are state and national groups that are willing to fund these kinds of efforts, and the local activists are big time burnt out, which is of course a very valid argument. A lot of us are just, you know, strained to the max, and we just haven't got the energy to show up at a smoke-in in front of City Hall, nor do we want to risk a jail sentence or our driver's license being revoked or our children being taken away by CPS. All the terror tactics, talking about your terrorists, we know where the terrorists are, you know, that we have to face to restore the rights that have been stolen from us. So there's something real to be said and reasonable to be said about, if you get an out-of-town organization that's willing to support a citywide initiative on tax and regulate, well, fine. Put it on the ballot. Pass it. And I would say, sure, and I've just said, yeah, but why not go to the city council with it initially, too, and, you know, hold them accountable. I'm particularly concerned because they're such a bunch of hypocrites at that council. They're always talking about medical marijuana, but for 5 years, their local law, essentially stopped anything from opening up. Now we have Greenway, which is meeting some of the need, but I don't think it's meeting all the need at all. I don't think it can, not one club, for essentially an area between, South San Francisco and Ventura or something. I mean, that's a huge amount of area for there only to be one medical marijuana club. I mean, there are a couple of smaller services. There's MedX, which serves 10 or 20 people. You know, there's a couple of smaller places, but nothing that's in terms of an open cannabis club. There's clubs in Los Angeles. There's clubs in San Francisco and Oakland. There's a couple of clubs in other counties out, you know, in Northern California, but not in Santa Cruz County, not in Monterey County, not in Santa Clara County. San Jose, the second largest city in California, doesn't have one. So Santa Cruz needs to have laws that really reflect its constituents. And I know that in... In 2004, Berkeley, which apparently was faced with a crackdown from the planning department, I believe it was, in Berkeley. And so they put on the ballot an ordinance, which was called Measure R, which gave more leeway to medical marijuana clubs. And that ordinance failed very, very narrowly, 0.1%, something like that, somewhere between 1 and 0.1%. Very, you know, it just barely failed. And of course, in Santa Cruz, the focus now is not on medical marijuana. I guess everybody feels the problem is solved, or at least it's been put on the back burner because of Lisa Molyneux's Greenway Club. And again, you know, I'm glad the Greenway is open. Lisa's been in the studio. Good news, you know. It's just obviously insufficient. You know, I'm sorry, in spite of what, you know, Mike Rotkin's comments that, you know, it's everything's rosy, we're rolling right ahead. You know, Rotkin has broken his word to the community on this. He promised he would change the law and reexamine the law, and he hasn't done it. And that was 2 years ago. Or was it 3 years ago? 2 or 3 years ago, he offered that. And he's been saying that since. But, I mean, you know, there's no point in my going on about Rotkin because, frankly, on some issues, Mike is a liar. You might put it nicely, he changes his mind a lot, or he makes statements that that later turn out not to be the case, or that sort of thing. But anyway, we need to decide what we want to do, those of us who are out here working on the issue. And it's looking to me like I don't think we may not get a call tonight because it looks like it's for some reason not happening. Though I did talk to his staff member Mark earlier today and seemed to think that Chris was going to call in, so maybe he will. I'm going to talk a little bit about one of the laws which, you know, I think I'm actually going to wait until I hear from the folks up there because it's really more pertinent rather than kind of rolling on with this stuff. And while I'm waiting for that hopeful call, I am going to invite you to call in on an alternate line. If you're listening to the show and you want to have some discussion, that could be actually our caller. Let's see who that is. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
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 Hi, Robert.
Is this Chris?
This is Chris.
Oh, right. We're just talking about you, Chris.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, no, we weren't saying bad things. We weren't saying good things. We were just saying, where is that man? So you've been involved in the struggle to legalize marijuana. Is that the fair way to put it in Berkeley for a couple of decades?
Yes, we've had a whole series of proposals. You know, the primary focus has been on medical marijuana, since that's the most practical, you know, winnable short-term goal. And, you know, we have several medical marijuana dispensaries in the city of Berkeley, and we have gotten city support for, you know, maintaining their existence. And
what kind of support have you gotten?
Well, we, in terms of creating a zoning permission so that, you know, although the feds can crack down whenever they decide to, you know, we have explicit in our zoning ordinance that, you know, we recognize that these clubs can exist and it's possible to apply to get a permit, you know, to have a medical marijuana dispensary. That's the good side of the story. The bad side of the story is Councilmember Mayo did a council item that was a solution in search of a problem where she put an arbitrary and capricious limit on the number of clubs that would be allowed in the city of Berkeley. So sadly, although we do have zoning regulations that permit us to have clubs, we do have a very strict limit on how many there can be, which, you know, is unfortunate.
How many?
Three.
Now, wasn't that a kind of, didn't people try to address that with Proposition R in the last election?
Yeah, I think the politicians were afraid that the voters, you know, would, you know, dramatically liberalize the rules. So they rushed to, you know, try to limit the number of clubs. I think, you know, in Berkeley, you know, there is no logical basis for having only three clubs. And, you know, there could be an argument that, you know, that the patient's needs could be better met by having more than three clubs. You know, I think activists decided not to make a giant fight over it. You know, given that, you know, we do have three successful clubs and much of our energy has to go into supporting the ones that exist. Two of them, their landlords, are doing something new with the buildings that they're in, and so they'll probably have to relocate. So I think, you know, people decided we need to focus our energy on supporting the existing clubs and helping them find a place to relocate where they, you know, will have community support.
Wasn't there some kind of problem? I was reading some story in the Daily Cal or the Berkeley, the Planet, about the reason for R is that there's some particular problem with either the zoning commission or the planning commission in terms of making it more difficult for even existing clubs to exist, not to mention new clubs. Am I wrong about that?
Well, unfortunately, there's always some bureaucrats and some politicians who are very nervous and, you know, worried about, you know, outside legal intervention, and, you know, so they're always trying to backpedal. It seems clear to me that the voters of Berkeley very strongly support, you know, various forms of decriminalization, and, you know, the support for full legalization is not quite as strong, but the support for medical marijuana is massively overwhelming.
I mean, it's
like over 75% of the population.
81%, I think I saw at some point. I'm looking at Measure R, and I know that in Santa Cruz we have one club. For 5 years we had zero clubs because of a restrictive zoning ordinance still on the books, you know, which passed by a so-called liberal city council, which of course isn't liberal at all on this issue, and frankly on a number of other issues, which may not be any news to you for, you know, in terms of city councils or.
Our zoning restrictions are really not that bad. If it wasn't for this arbitrary cap that was put, there are sufficient places that are, you know, far enough away from schools and not in residential neighborhoods. You know, there are sufficient commercial areas that, you know, Berkeley can meet the need. But, you know, the one weakness, or the worst weakness, is, you know, this arbitrary cap.
I'm looking at the Measure R, and I guess 49.8% said yes, 50.2% said no, and it would have eliminated existing limits on the amount of medical marijuana a qualified patient or primary caregiver could possess. Currently, 2.5 pounds, and up to 10 cannabis plants. It would also have established a peer review committee to certify that any new cannabis collective or dispensary has a strategy to meet safety and operational compliance standards.
Uh-huh.
It would have required the city to deputize individuals operating collectives as drug control officers to provide them with theoretically immunity, though that didn't seem to work too well with Ed Rosenthal. But
yeah.
It would have provided... go ahead.
Well, Measure R had multiple good features to it that would have gotten a lot more than 49% of the vote, but many of the voters said there was one flaw in one sentence that whenever I was in meetings where people were talking about
what was the flaw?
The liberal-minded people or progressives, to the extent that they didn't vote for it, they would always cite this one sentence that, you know, they interpreted it to mean, you know, that it would allow this anywhere in the city. So it was sort of like that one paragraph was the Achilles heel of Measure R. And if that paragraph had not been in it, I think the essential ideas of Measure R would have been adopted. And it's sort of like the tree ordinance that was on the ballot at the same time. It had a potentially, it was argued that it would be very expensive to have this tree board with all the regulations. So on both of those issues, I'm trying to work with activists in Berkeley to take away the Achilles heel of the tree ordinance and of Measure R and bring them back without those, you know, couple of sentences or one paragraph that seems to lose them a lot of
support. Have you tried to do that through city council directly and found you don't have the votes? Or?
No, we probably, given our city council, we probably have to put it on the ballot, unfortunately. And, you know, like, most of our city council members oppose Measure R. I think I was the only one on the city council who didn't oppose it.
I've only got about 10 minutes. Let me run through a couple of quick questions for you, Chris.
The leadership on these kinds of issues does not come from the politicians. It comes from the community.
Gotcha. Now, you also were concerned in 1999 with the Kinder and Safer Streets Act, which was concerned about the massive rise in police arrests for marijuana and for felony arrests for marijuana. You remember
that? Uh-huh, yeah.
What happened to that measure? Because this is something that really is a concern of here in Santa Cruz. The proposal that kind of a la Measure Z in Oakland here in Santa Cruz is that we say, well, make enforcement of marijuana laws the lowest priority. And my response to that has been that was done in Berkeley in 73 and 79, and yet
right.
And yet you and others pointed out in 99 that the police weren't following this. What happened to that Kinder and Safer Streets Act, and what's the situation now?
By saying that it's the lowest priority, that sort of leaves it up to the discretion of, you know, either the command staff or the individual officer. And, you know, in some cases that works fine because, you know, I would say your average Berkeley police officer probably believes that this, you know, that smoking marijuana should not be illegal. But, you know, there are some very hard-nosed people who, you know, sort of have a different attitude. And, you know, there's even though it's the theoretical policy to place the lowest priority on it,
right?
You know, they still have the legal authority to arrest people.
And it's often the higher-ups and the most conservative people who dictate that policy, right?
Well, in some cases, what happens is the business people are complaining and trying to get rid of the homeless people. So if you look at who actually gets arrested for marijuana in Berkeley, you know, to the extent anecdotal evidence of the people that I know, you know, a significant number of them are people of color and or homeless or both.
Now, you're quoted as saying in an article online in 99, despite overwhelming community support for the Berkeley Cannabis Initiative in 1996's Proposition 215, in which 81% of Berkeley voters supported the use of medical marijuana for the seriously ill, in the last 2 years, marijuana arrests have nearly doubled and felony marijuana arrests have nearly tripled. What's happened since then and now in 2006?
Every 6 months we get a report that, you know, shows how many arrests have been conducted. And, you know, I always forward those reports a lot, you know, to the activists so that they can monitor them and see, you know, what patterns there are and if there's particular trends that we need to counter.
Maybe you can send them down to me. I'd like to see if you got a kind of a record for the last 5 years of what's been going on.
Oh, sure.
My problem is
we send them to Normal and to a couple other groups.
Have they been
happy to send it to you too?
That would be great. I mean, have they been increasing? I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you because I've got like 6 minutes left here and I want to get as much in as I can. Have arrests been continuing to increase? Have they leveled off? Have they dropped? We're trying to figure out what's... I know that what you did in this proposed Kinder, Safer Streets Act, which I guess didn't pass, or what happened to it?
I'm afraid we could only get 4 votes on the city council for it, and you need 5 votes out of the 9 to win.
And this would have essentially prioritized arrests in terms of categories of arrest, making private use of marijuana the lowest, and then maybe arresting people who sell to young people a higher priority, that sort of thing.
I interpret the law as already doing most of what we were proposing, but. You know, since it is left up to interpretation, we wanted to have a stronger message that, you know, why are we still getting these arrests? And, you know, in my experience, much of it is tied up to the attacks on the homeless people. And if you're homeless and you're not doing anything criminal, you know, one way that we can nab you is if you happen to have some marijuana.
So
we can't get you, you're not really violating any
right.
crimes or serious problems, but the business people want to get rid of you.
Have arrests been increasing? And I mean, what's happened? Do you have those stats are you aware of what they are?
I skim over the reports, but I.
Yeah, why don't you get them to me, and I'll pass on the information to the community when I get them, and maybe we can have. I know I caught you a day in advance before this broadcast. Maybe we can find a longer period of time if you have it to talk about this in some detail, because there are other concerns that people who are circulating this initiative have down here. One is the idea that it's somehow unconstitutional to make. Your Safer, Kinder Streets Act might have been unconstitutional because it put restrictions on police department arrest
uh-huh.
policy. And I'm not aware that's the case. Are you? Or?
That's interesting because, the city bureaucracy that strenuously opposed us on all of these kinds of things didn't make that one of their arguments against us. So if it was unconstitutional, one would think that the people trying to stop us would have strenuously made that point. And I certainly wouldn't want to be proposing something that's unconstitutional, since a big part of my energy has gone into fighting the unconstitutional attacks on the homeless, like Measure O, and the attack on the newspapers, like the Newsrack ordinance, to the best of my knowledge, they never
right.
made that objection. So
yeah,
that's fine.
I don't think that's the case either, and I know that there was a claim that I guess the original Berkeley Police Review Commission's 1973 powers were unconstitutional in some respect, but we're talking with Chris Worthington, city councilman up in Berkeley. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show. You bring up some very interesting points, and this of course is a key concern of mine and the show's, about how the police selectively use various laws to harass particular groups of people who are low income, homeless, poor, a minority, and so forth. What's happening up in Berkeley around the sleeping ban situation? Are people still being arrested for sleeping in vehicles and outside? Has that become more, a moderated policy? What's happening with that?
It's quite obvious that many homeless people do sleep outside or sleep in their vehicles. It's technically in Berkeley, it's not illegal to sleep in your vehicle. And some people have proposed that it should be. But, it's sort of, I think it almost accidentally happened that it isn't legal. It isn't illegal, which is good. Some of the business community is still campaigning, even this year, to try to outlaw sitting on the sidewalk, you know, as a one way to get arrest the homeless for sitting on the sidewalk. Of course, in order to do that, they'd have to arrest the college students as well, which doesn't thrill my constituents to think that college students would get arrested for sitting on the sidewalk. So they haven't been able to ram that through the city council yet, but they're trying again this year.
Any update on the free box in People's Park?
Unfortunately, the university administration has, you know, sort of in the middle of the night come and torn it out after people, you know, replaced what they had previously torn out. And, you know, the last chancellor, when he, you know, Berdahl, you know, he attacked People's Park right after he got hired. And the widespread community opposition killed his stupid proposals to wipe out People's Park. But Bergeneau is not being quite so extreme. And instead of sort of trying to build on it or destroy the park, either he or the lower level bureaucrats, you know, have seemingly focused on, you know, just getting rid of the free box instead of getting rid of the park. So to some extent, you know, their bureaucracy is practicing divide and conquer, thinking, you know, if they take little things away, first they took the advisory board away and people didn't protest, you know, then they, and also actually they kicked the city out of being co-managers of the park. And there wasn't that much of a protest. And then they tore out the free box. And there's been a little tiny bit of protest, but not enough.
So let me ask you about, and I'm skipping around quickly because of the time. In Santa Cruz, there's been major concern about surveillance of political protests by the Santa Cruz Police Department. Is the Berkeley Police Department under similar scrutiny for political surveillance, or is that not a problem up there?
Well, Donna Spring, our longtime council member, Green Party activist, she has been very outspoken about this and about, you know, what opposing the city getting involved with Homeland Security, computers, and all that kind of stuff. So far, you know, we seem to be getting told that the city's not doing that. You know, I hope that that's true. Getting information is not always super easy, as you probably realize. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think if we did get evidence of it, I think there would be a pretty strong reaction against it. And at least on the surface, you know, we're getting indication that it's not happening in Berkeley. But Donna is sort of taking the lead on that. And I think she actually has a council item coming up dealing with parts of that.
Go ahead.
And the reason she's doing it in writing is to get a paper trail for the public to know that these concerns have been raised, and we want to make sure, you know, in writing that it's not happening.
So the council has essentially told the Berkeley Police Department it does not want them to take Homeland Security funds, even for unrelated computer stuff and that sort of thing. Because our Santa Cruz City Council has been, you know, encouraging the police department to take these funds and has been accepting those grants.
Yeah, we actually haven't adopted a clear policy, but Donna is pushing for a good policy, but we haven't actually voted on it yet.
Okay. Your term begins and ends when?
My what?
Your city council term, when does it end?
Oh, Donna and me and the mayor are all up in November of 06.
You going to run again or not?
You know, all during the last few months, a lot of progressives have been, asking me to think about running for mayor because they're unhappy. They worked to get rid of Shirley Dean and get Tom, and now
That's Tom Bates.
He's not as bad as he was, but he's not providing leadership in a progressive way. And so, you know, I haven't really gotten into all of that. Right now I'm focused on the projects that I'm working on, and I'll think about if I'm running or what I'm running for.
Gotcha.
Probably in a few months down the line.
Uh-huh. Well, we've been talking with Chris Worthington, who's city councilman in Berkeley, potentially a replacement for I've Stole the Papers and I'm Very Sorry, Tom Bates up there. Are you going to be emailing me some documents at rnorse3@hotmail.com? Hopefully, maybe I can email you off air and let you know that again, so you can actually write it down. As to what's happening with what's happening with the police? Are they responding to these concerns about arrests, or are they just going after intensifying marijuana arrests against groups that they want to arrest, in spite of the concerns of the community? And if you get some sense of it, yourself, by looking over those reports, maybe we can talk about it again next week or something to that effect.
Sure. Well, first, just so that I don't lend confusion, in terms of the Tom Bates stuff, I guess my current strategy is, let's come up with a list of things that we want him to do, and really pressure him to take a progressive stand on things like medical marijuana and, like our other progressive causes, and see if we can negotiate to get him to take a firmer stand before we really think about, running candidates and that kind of stuff. I think the first phase is putting forward our demands and see what we can get him to commit to. I think on most of these issues, like certainly on medical marijuana and trees, the overwhelming majority of Berkeley voters are pretty liberal. And, we might be able to leverage a commitment out of him to support these kinds of things, because I don't think he's going to face political retribution if
right.
he supports us on this kind of stuff.
Remember, you're talking to a Santa Cruz audience down here. Probably most of them never heard of Tom Bates, or I guess they did when he was an assemblyman.
I know the world is small, and I just
don't
want to be sending any confusing messages.
I understand. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I probably shouldn't have asked the question. It's not terribly important to me down here. More important to me is the work you're doing between now and November. Your political future is your business, and, frankly, you're one of the few politicians I don't have a low opinion of, and, I've got to be careful to maintain my high, keep that opinion up there for people who I see are working on the issues that I think are important.
Yeah, well, since I got elected to office, my opinion of politicians has dropped precipitously. It's very hard to...
You were elected, 10, 12 years ago, something like that?
9 years.
Right.
But we just got to work on the grassroots and organize people and pressure whoever the politicians are. They can be pressured. Whether they're liberal or conservative, there frequently are ways that grassroots people can win battles against the wishes of the politicians. That's how marijuana issues are going to be won.
We could talk about that, I hopefully, next time, and you can give us some tips on how to do that. Anything happening around the anti-war scene up there? Is it going to have people closing down potential military centers, or is that just sort of a fantasy from bygone days?
Well, on Valentine's Day, the Grandmothers for Peace, or the Raging Grannies, are doing events at military recruitment centers. I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing one in Santa Cruz as well. They're doing this all over the country. So that's a wonderful way to spend Valentine's Day with the Raging Grannies. And these senior citizen women are going to be going in and volunteering for the military so that they don't have to take these other young youngsters to go off and kill them. And
well, the army is in trouble and can use some help from the grannies, I'm sure, you know, with the recruitment goals being down.
Well, a lot of those senior citizens are fierce fighters, and I wouldn't want to be out there fighting against them.
Chris, I appreciate your getting on the air with me. Let me get back to you when we have more time.
Okay.
If people have questions for you, do you have a phone number that they can get those questions answered at?
Sure. The Amrythote 510-981-7170. Or they can email me, kworthington@ci.berkeley.ca.us.
Again, 510
981-7170.
Sounds good. Talking with Chris Worthington, Berkeley City Council member. Thanks, Chris, and I'm going to try to hog-tie you next time and do some more chatting with you.
Well, keep up your great activism protecting homeless people and all these other good causes, too.
Hey.
We really need people like you to be on the front line defending us.
Well, maybe we'll smoke in a joint together. Who knows? Hey, thank you for being on the line, Chris.
Take care.
All right, man. Bye-bye. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. For some strange reason, we're 7 minutes over time. I don't blame anyone for this strange situation. But coming up next, it's From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis, the man with the plan, and also the man with the expertise. We'll see what kind of expertise he has, either musical or otherwise, as he rolls into the show he's doing. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Tune in on Sunday when we got more of the same. And if you want to catch me off air between now and then, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Like a hurricane.